Welcome to the New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, the New Mind Creator. Today I'll be interviewing Nicole Kerr. Please make sure to hit the subscribe button so that you receive alerts when new episodes are available on Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Also, please leave me a review on iTunes or Spotify. So what was your near-death experience?
I was a cadet. I was in one of the first female classes at the United States Air Force Academy back in 1982. My near-death experience was the beginning of my second year at the academy, where I was in a car crash. I was getting a ride back with a fellow cadet, and we were in a Corvette convertible, and we were at a mandatory squadron function, and I asked him if I could have a ride back, and he wanted to stop and have a couple of beers. And I grew up in the South, and my grandfather was an alcoholic, so my dad forbade alcohol, so I did not grow up around drinking and did not have any drinking experience until that actual day. And I actually had two beers that day, and he had more alcohol. And then we stopped. He wanted to stop again. And what I didn't realize is he had an agenda to make out, and I just wanted a ride back. And he got really mad at me when he tried to make a sexual pass and turned, was speeding in the Corvette. And he turned it when I said no to him, and we fishtailed, hit a boulder, flipped the car over, both thrown out, and I was pronounced dead at the scene by some bypassers that heard the crash, came out, couldn't get any vitals on me, and went in and got a blanket and covered me up. The driver was conscious and had some injuries to his back, and the first responders got there approximately 10 to 13 minutes after the initial 911 call, and I was covered up that entire time. So when the EMT took the blanket off to look at me, he couldn't get any vitals as well. And I know this now because he came to my hospital room 10 weeks after the crash to check on me and told me this story. And he said that he did a sternal knuckle, which is to elicit pain in the body. And the only sign of life he could get in me at that point was my right eye flickered and pupil dilated. And so he knew I was still alive, and his greatest fear is that he couldn't keep me alive. Now, if we remember the saying about the soul in the window, do you remember what that saying is, if by any chance, Maurice?
No, I've never heard of that before.
It's called "The eyes are the window to your soul."
Yes, I've heard that.
That, yes. Okay. So if you put that together, my soul and I flew through the windshield and up into the air. My energy body, which we all have, cracked open. And my soul, that energy, that breath that keeps us alive, it left me, so that when my physical body hit the ground, I didn't feel any of that. And I was really, I had a lot of injuries, let's just put it that way. So I didn't feel any of that. And so my memory of what happened at that point came back 19 years later. But back to the scene of the accident, he realized that there was life in me. And then at that point, Maurice, he got a blood pressure reading of 60/0. Which basically is dead. They got these mass pants on me that they had never even used. They'd just been trained in them to get the blood flow up to the heart and the other organs, and got me to the nearest community hospital. And they did not think I was going to make it that night. It was really touch and go, but I finally stabilized out of nowhere in the early hours of the morning. So the only thing that I remember about once we stopped to watch the sunset and waking up in my hospital ICU room was bright white, clear light. And that was it for almost 20 years. That's all I remembered. And then fast forward, I'm coming out of Starbucks, getting in my car in Atlanta, Georgia to drive home. I mean, to drive to work. I was working at the Centers for Disease Control at the time, gone on with my life, tried to adapt as best I could. And all of a sudden, and it wasn't the Starbucks coffee that brought it back. I remember exactly how I was sitting in the car on the day of the accident. And instead of going to work, I went to my chiropractor and they didn't have any openings. And I said, I'm sitting here on the floor for all day until I can see Dr. West. And he fit me in and he said what was happening was your body has repressed memories and they're starting to surface now. And I said, why 19 years later? Why 20 years later? And he said, well, the body needed to feel safe and it needed to feel supported. And up until this point, you didn't have that. So you couldn't deal with the level of trauma that you were going to encounter if you didn't have the support and the resources to deal with the trauma. It would have sent me to the psych ward for sure. So the memory came back over the next 2 days. And that's when I remember crossing over to the other side. And in the book that I just recently published called You Are Deathless, I talk about Casper, the ghost kind of a spirit. It's kind of transparent, but it does have like an outline. And it was male. I had all these descriptions. And then in August of this year, when I released the book of last year, in my meditation, my grandfather on my dad's side came to me and he passed away at age 58 years old from a massive heart attack. And I was 58 years old. And he told me that it was him that came down as an angel and got my spirit, my soul, and brought me up to the space when the accident happened. And I was blown away because I had heard a lot of people talk about when you have a near-death experience, a lot of people see their deceased loved ones when they're on this other side and they talk with them. And I had not had any of that recollection. But what was interesting to me is I had all the right components. I just didn't have it as my grandfather. And he said that he's coming to me now because I'm the age that he was when he crossed over. So, and he was in his 30s. He wasn't 58 when he came to get me. And so when I went up with him and we did go in a vertical direction, it was a space where other angels and spirits were, and I could hear, and it wasn't in English, Maurice. I don't know how, telepathy or something, but I'm not in a physical body now. I can look down and I can see my body as a corpse lying in a ditch. I can remember what I was wearing and I can see that, you know, they're waiting for the first responders and the fire departments to get there to continue to work on me. So I hear these angels say to each other, well, we will help them, but they have to ask us. And I was going, And they said, you know, because we have free will, we can make choices. We always have a choice. And the angels are all around us and they want to help us, but we have to ask them unless it's a life and death situation like mine was, and then they will intercede. And I did remember crying out later when my memory came back, oh my God, help me. And, but I knew I was going to die. And I clinically did at that moment. So that was one message, is we all have at least one guardian angel with us. And there are many types of angels and they come in many different forms. So to start connecting with the spiritual realm and your angel, and they are here to help us, but we have to ask. And then the second message I got was that I was going to go back. And I was like, oh no, please, please, no. I do not want to go back down there and get in that body, because I knew what I was going to be up against if I came back on Earth. And that was getting in a body that had massive amounts of injuries, including an amputation of the left foot, a pelvis fracture. I mean, it was bad. Let's put it this way. I was in the hospital 4 months, 7 weeks in ICU, 6 major operations, 2 code blues. So I tried to go back 2 more times after I came back. And needless to say, I kept coming back, and I'm here for a reason. And I now know what that reason is. And that message that I was told to tell people, given directly to me by spirit when my memory returned, was do not be afraid of death. And while seemingly a quite simple message, it's taken me almost 4 decades to understand what that looks like for me. And now I understand that purpose, and I have shifted my focus toward the spirituality that is essential to our wellness. And if you think about almost every book written, death itself is cloaked in this veil of gloom and doom. And death has a cloud of depression and negativity around it throughout our culture and society. And my own experience, along with hundreds of thousands of others, is 100% different. Death is absolute beauty, light, and loving kindness on the other side. Pure love.
Wow. That's that's amazing.
It's quite a story. And that's, I think, why it's doing so well is, you know, it took me 13 years to write this book because the book helped heal me. And I've been in the wellness field my entire life. And I started out as a dietitian trying to help people. And I listened to your story with interviewing Kevin, where he had an eating disorder, or he lost all that weight and, you know, realized that he had exercise and eating addictions. And when we have soul loss, which is something that happens when you're traumatized and parts of your soul leave you, they do that, or your soul does that, as a means of self-protection. And one of the, there's 3 really big symptoms to that. And it reminded me of your interview with him. And one was, I didn't want to be here. Okay. And 2, I have this low level, consistent feeling that something is missing, kind of like depression. And it's interesting to note that many compulsive behaviors or addictions fall into this statement. And for me, I can clearly see the link between my compulsive eating, or it's now called binge eating disorder, and my feeling of emptiness. And that started a year after my accident. I never got any health help. Parents told me, the doctor said, Nicole needs mental health, psychiatrist help for this trauma. My mother told the doctor that Jesus and God were our psychiatrists and that we don't need that. And she was wrong about that. You know, God or Jesus didn't come down and sit on the sofa and help me. So as a result, to deal with my pain, I developed a binge eating disorder that lasted for almost 20 years. So that was how much I hated myself, because at the root of that was self-hate. And my parents blamed me for that wreck because I had 2 beers. And I had gone with this guy and they thought I was dating him. And I wasn't, I was just getting a ride back. I didn't even know him hardly. And then I smoked a cigarette. Okay. That's all what you're supposed to experience in college anyway. But those were my dad's rules. My dad was a Marine and he was very adamant about his rules. And if you break the rules, that you're going to get in trouble, just like with God. You know, if you disobey God, then bad things are going to happen to you. And that's exactly what he told my 3 siblings. Nicole didn't obey me, so this is what happened to her. And Maurice, of everything that I'd been through, the blame from my dad, which therefore went to God was blaming me as well. I didn't deserve, you know, to go to heaven. That's how I died, living in that state of fear. And I think that's why I was chosen to come back, because I had that concept wrong. God, when my experience of God was not that God is judgmental or God is the wrath of God will come on you if you don't follow these rules, because every different denomination seems to have a different set of rules. And I grew up Southern Baptist and Lutheran. And even though they both talk about God, They both have different ways of interacting with God and rules to please God. So I think God himself is confused about all of this. But anyway, needless to say, that was not my experience. God was pure love. And love is all that matters and is the source of all that exists. And that's one of the common lessons from all near-death experiences. And I have tried to reframe death and these our association with it and get people to not fear it, but to start being present to it and start asking themselves about what is their concept of God and death and what comes after, and to start these conversations, because that's what lives on, is our that spiritual essence, that soul in us. And what are we doing in order to try to have an alignment in our body that we're not fearing it? Because fear is a low vibration, and it will always, if you make a decision out of fear, it will, for me, it does not end up working out well.
How did your dad's response to you affect you? Because I can only imagine you went through this horrific crash and the injuries, and then to hear your dad say that because you didn't obey him, this would happen to you.
I was devastated. In fact, the first thing I remember saying when I was conscious was to my commanding officer, and my squadron commander were there when I woke up, and I said, please don't tell my dad, he'll kill me. And the officer said to me, well, we've already called your parents and they'll be here. Your mother's coming tomorrow and your dad will be here at the end of the week. I mean, that's how I grew up, in such a fear-based environment from my father, and then church as a foundation in the South, adding more fear. So it absolutely, I have worked my whole life. I became a people pleaser as a result. And I have tried to please my father to get him to forgive me and to give me his blessing and acceptance and love. And to this day, he never has. And what is the saddest part about this is he doesn't believe my story about God. He believes the Bible literally and figuratively. And that, you know, when I said, well, Jesus said, judge not lest you be judged, and you're judging me. He don't want to hear any of that. You know, you can't argue with a religious addict. Unfortunately, they just, you're just never going to win. And they have become my mother and my dad. They still believe I deserved it. And what is so, you know, unbelievable is this past May, a year ago, I was able to get in touch with my roommate who quit the academy in December of that year. The wreck was in August. I was sent home for rehab in December, and she went home for Christmas and never went back to the academy and never told the other two roommates why. There were only four girls. And so I found her on Facebook, Maurice, and we talked. She was willing to do a Zoom call. And the first thing she said was, I'm so sorry, Nicole, I caused the wreck. And I said, what are you talking about? The guy driving caused the wreck. He was drunk. And she said, no, you had asked me for a ride back. And I had told you yes at the beginning of the event. And she said, you know, and then when it came time to leave, they'd been serving beer at this event, which was against the Air Force protocol or rules. And she said, you know, most of the guys were drunk. So the senior asked me to drive his car back, and I really liked him, and you wanted a ride with us. And I said, no, there's one other guy left. And I said, but he's been drinking. And she goes, oh, Nicole, they've all been drinking. Don't worry about it. Go have some fun. I'll see you back at the academy. And she never did. So she couldn't deal with the guilt, and it has haunted her for 39 years. Neither one of us knew what happened. She just disappeared. So when I told my dad that, he, you know what he said, Maurice? He told me, and I knew it. I knew he'd say this. He said, well, you should have walked.
Oh, God.
I said, I'm supposed to walk 15 miles in at 7:30 at night back from Monument to the Air Force Academy, where a bear could have eaten me, or I could have been picked up. I mean, it was just, there were no cell phones back there, but that is, he just cannot take responsibility or own that piece of it. You know, he has to have something to blame for that. And it has taken me years to let that go. And I have no relationship with him this day. He lives in Australia. He's 84 and I do not communicate with him.
Wow. That's sad.
Yes. That is the word, sad. I never thought the way we were raised with family being the most important thing that I would lose in their elder year. I'd lose the relationship with my mother and father. And I lost it with my mother because she's tied to my dad. Whatever he says, she believes. So I've lost them both.
Wow. Yeah, that's really sad because anything that pushes us apart like that, I know there are parts in the Bible, but we don't fully understand everything in the Bible. But I know love is a key principle. Despite everything that's in there, love is the common thread that holds it all together.
Amen. Yeah. And loving ourselves and others is the most important thing we can do. And unconditional love is a concept that we as humans have a lot of work to learn.
Yes. We've fallen short on that, and we can definitely do better with that for sure. You mentioned angel. You said that we all have an angel assigned to us, but we have to ask for help. Mm-hmm. Is this help we ask for internally or with our outside voice?
Internally or outside. And mm-hmm. I know people laugh when they hear other people say, angels, please bring me a parking space, you know? But dead government, that's one of those Southern terms, dead government. Parking spaces show up every time I ask for help with one. And you have to remember, it has to become a habit to ask for help and not to just ask when you're like in a health crisis or somebody else is, you know, in a health crisis or something traumatic is happening. And then you ask for help. This is about developing a relationship with the spiritual realm to know that they're working on our behalf and they're not doing something to us in a negative way.
True. Wow. That's just amazing, this story. And you have just gone through a lot. You've been, health, award-winning health and wellness expert for 30
years. Well, because my health was so compromised, you know, I got my master's in public health and then, you know, COVID-19 came out and here I'd studied, you know, all this extra schooling for public health. And I felt like nobody wanted to listen to what I had to say or the experts that have studied it. You know, it was all this, everybody just formed their own opinion and the science and the, what made common sense just went out the door. And talk about a nutrition disaster. Everybody started eating their comfort foods. But who would think it would last for 3 years and they'd still be eating their comfort foods, right? So, you know, the government didn't put out messages on how you can boost your immune system by, you know, eating more fruits and vegetables. And I'm not talking about French fries and spaghetti sauce or, you know, pizza sauce. You know, it's like that's when we really should be pumping those messages out about how important fruits and vegetables and cooking, you know, well, it was an ideal time to do that. And not any of the agencies mentioned any of that. It was all about, you know, the vaccines, which have their place, but we have to take responsibility for our physical health, and we have to take responsibility for our spiritual well-being, because we have got to take care of one another, and we've got to take care of all sentient beings on this planet better, and we got to take care of Mother Earth better.
Ooh, I know you had some dark times through your journey, and you had to push through, and who was that person, one person, that was really in your corner through all of this?
My husband, Dr. Paul David Deering, and I didn't meet him till I was 39 years old. So those people that are single out there thinking they're never going to meet anybody, just don't give up hope. Because I met him in Hawaii, where everybody said, Nicole, you're never going to meet anybody. You're too tall, because I'm 5'11", and everybody there is short. And he said, and people would say, and they all live at home with their parents because real estate is so expensive. But Paul was there, and I met him in the midst of all of that, and we've been together for 18 years. And that man, I dedicated my book to him. And I don't know, it just came to me one day as I was trying to think of that. And I said to my husband, Paul David Deering, who saw in me what I could not see in myself until one day I could. I came back, and now I know why.
Mm-hmm.
And then he wrote a song. He's a musician as well as a professor of education. And he wrote a song for me, She Came Back. And, you know, I now know why I came back. And it's to put this message out there. We do not need to fear God. God does not want to have anything to do with fear. God is not about fear at all. If you're in fear, that is a man-made conditional state.
And you've, wow. When, if someone wants to work with you, how would they go about doing so?
Well, you can, I have my website at NicoleKerr, K-E-R-R.com. I will tell you, I am taking a sabbatical this year to promote my book. I just finished the Audible version of it, which took me 3 months. I narrated it myself, Maurice, and I had to go back into therapy.
Wow.
Because it was, it just brought it all up again, you know, and my goodness. And then to hear yourself narrate your own story. Oh boy, that knocked me out again. So I'm having to just deal with my own energy, staying grounded and connected and aligned with spirit. And I'm telling people I'm doing my vocation right now instead of my occupation.
Gotcha.
And I also have, as one of my credentials, besides being a dietitian and a, you know, master's of public health, BTDT on my book. And people are going, what in the world is BTDT? Yeah. I said, been there, done that. And they go, you can write that on a book. I said, I did. I printed it. And it means, you know, the experience that I have been through is more important than any theology or any concepts or whatever. I experienced the other side, and it was beyond blissful. And we have truly nothing to fear when we close our eyes and we make the journey over. We are not alone, and we are not judged. And we need to quit judging ourselves on this side of the planet, in this body. If we could just quit emotionally judging ourselves when we think something or do something, and have some compassion on ourselves, and quit being so critical, as one of your guests had said, that he's so hard on himself. You know, lighten up. You are, your true self, your soul self is perfect. And we are loved more than we can fathom.
What is your one to grow on? What valuable piece of information would you like to leave our audience with?
I think since this is all about love, I would say, you know, of course, we do not die. And so to really explore that concept, but how have you expanded your capacity to love?
Thank you for listening to The New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, The New Mind Creator. This podcast has been sponsored by Abundant Sports and True Serum. Head over to www.mauriceflournoy.com to receive more motivation and insight to help create your new mind.